Finance and Policy Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. The clerk, please take the roll.
Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Heintzman, present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Keeler, present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorne.
Present.
Cleavorne, present. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Krisha.
Krisha, present.
Krisha, present. Representative Mason.
Present.
Mason, present. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, present.
Meckland, present. Representative Knorr.
Knorr, present.
Knorr, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson.
Thompson, present.
Thompson, present. And a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. May I have a motion from someone, please, to approve the minutes for March 24th, 2021?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Knorr moves approval of the minutes for March 24th, 2021. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
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 And those opposed. The motion prevails and the minutes for March 24th, 2021 are approved. Today, we will be hearing public testimony on the DE amendment to House File 933. After hearing testimony, we'll begin to take official action on the bill and hear amendments. If necessary, we have additional committee time set aside tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. to finish amendments and to vote on the bill. First up, we have public testimony. In addition to the testifiers we have on the call today, members will find additional written testimony in their packets and posted on the higher ed committee page. We have a number of testifiers on the list today, and I will ask everyone to keep their testimony to 2 to 3 minutes to make sure that everyone who has signed up gets a chance to speak. Our first testifier on the list is President Scott Olson from Winona State University.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair Christensen and Chair Bernardi, members of the committee. I'm Scott Olson. I'm the president of Winona State University. You know, Minnesota has a big challenge. Minnesota's manufacturers and trades cannot find all the skilled workers they need to build Minnesota's future. These are great jobs that pay well, so why do we have a shortage? Well, we believe that one major factor is the shortage of high school teachers in the technical areas and trades, like I had when I was in high school, who teach and encourage young people to pursue these fields. Many of you will remember the Winona mini session, in particular, a hearing at Minnesota State College Southeast, where we learned about the extent of this teacher shortage and the effects that it's having on the trades and manufacturing. You've already invested in the Education Village at Winona State University. Thank you for that. In partnership with our local Chamber of Commerce here and the K-12 school system, Winona's built a robust career and technical education internship program for high school kids that's the buzz of Chambers of Commerce across the whole North Star State. But that's just the start. The idea behind HF 380 is to appropriate one-time money to develop a pilot program for students who would study technical skills for 2 years and then transfer to a university to earn a teaching license. The Education Village was designed for programs like this. These teachers would help us address our shortage and help Minnesota high schools meet the promise that every kid have the opportunity to graduate ready for the Minnesota economy of the future. This program would be designed to be replicable statewide, anywhere that a technical college and a university can partner. Chancellor Malhotra fully supports this proposal, and I know I speak for my colleague, President Larry Lundblad at Minnesota State College Southeast when I say we stand ready to meet this challenge. This bill was strongly supported by the House Industrial Education Committee, some of whose members also serve here, and some of whom were co-authors of the bill. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of HF 380. Thank you for the Education Village. Thank you for the mini session, and thank you for everything you do for Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Next up, we have Paul Cervenek. Mr. Cervenek, please continue.
Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, members of the committee. My name is Paul Cervenek, and I serve as president of the Minnesota Private College Council. I want to begin by thanking you for the opportunities you have given to our students to testify before this committee, and for listening to them in the meetings you had with them individually and in small groups, so that they could convey to you the deep gratitude they have for the financial aid they received through the Minnesota State Grant Program. The students who testified shared a compelling message. The State Grant Program makes a transformational difference in the lives of more than 70,000 students at public and private institutions who receive the state grant. But the current level of funding for the state grant program is insufficient to meet the needs of low-income students and to address Minnesota's racial and economic disparities in higher education outcomes. Who are the beneficiaries of the state grant program? 43% of all Minnesota students receive a state grant. 56% of all Minnesota students of color receive a state grant, and more than 60% of Minnesota Black and Native American students receive a state grant. 68% of all state grant recipients come from families with incomes below $50,000. As these data points demonstrate, the state grant program is the most impactful option at the state level for making investments in race equity and income equity in higher education. The state grant program advances equity and helps close disparities by recognizing that some students have a much greater need for the state's financial support in paying for college than other students do. House File 993 misses the opportunity to make a significant new investment in the state grant program. Under this bill, state grant awards will not increase for Minnesota's highest need students for the next 2 years. State grants will be frozen next year and the year after at the level they are at this current academic year. This means that the House is missing an important opportunity to invest in educational equity in higher education. This bill makes substantial new investments in the budgets of public higher education institutions, but fails to make similar new investments in the need-based financial aid that lower income students rely on for access to college and to complete a college degree. We should not leave increases for financial aid for lower income students out of the funding increases in the state's next higher education budget. Our state will be better served by a bill that strikes a fairer balance between investments in institutions and direct investments in lower income students through need-based financial aid. In other words, a bill that prioritizes need-based financial aid along with prioritizing funding for public institutions. As the legislative process moves forward, we want to continue working with all of you, and we want to encourage you by the end of the legislative process to achieve a balanced set of higher education investments that include a significant new investment in educational equity through the state grant program. Thank you for the opportunity to share our views on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Cervenek. Next up, we have Mark Grant. Mr. Grant, if you would state your name and continue, please.
Of course, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, committee members. My name is Mark Grant. I'm a communication and studies instructor at Dakota County Technical College and currently help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. Thanks for the opportunity today to share our thoughts with you. Let me begin by thanking the committee for their hard work on House File 993. I know it's been a challenging session and the pandemic has made the normal channels of communication difficult, but this committee's continued willingness to engage with our faculty is greatly appreciated. Just yesterday, Representative O'Neill spoke to the impact her conversations with our faculty have had on her as she approached the work for this committee. So I look forward to being able to continue those conversations, hopefully back to face-to-face someday. This past year has been destabilizing in many ways, and we believe that the best thing that we can do for our students, our communities, and the broader economy of Minnesota at this time is to inject some stability. So we're grateful for the $64.8 million in operation and maintenance campus support, as it is a significant step in providing that stability. Money to the campuses not only ensures the courses, programs, classrooms, labs, and qualified faculty will be there when all students return to campus, but it also continues to be the single best way to truly address college affordability. We also appreciate the $1.25 million to address student basic needs targeting mental health. As many of you know, our system has lost roughly 50% of our counselors in just the past 15 years. During that same time, we have seen the mental health needs of our students only increase. This difficult situation has certainly been compounded by the events of the last year, and now we find ourselves at a truly critical point. So we're grateful for both the attention and the funding that this bill provides. We do remain a little concerned about the potential impact of making budgetary decisions that have long-term fiscal consequences on our campus based entirely on one-time federal relief funds. This concern exists in large part because there still appears to be continued uncertainty surrounding the acceptable use of some of these funds. So we would simply encourage this committee to seek clarification on the possible parameters of this money before committing it in this budget. The mission of the more than 4,000 college instructors on 39 campuses across our state continues to be providing all students, regardless of who they are or where they come from, with a world-class transformative education. Our commitment has not wavered, and I believe it's been on clear display as we rose to meet the needs of our students and of industry in this last difficult year. Minnesota State College faculty looks forward to working with these members to continue to meet those needs as this bill moves through the committee process. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Jonathan Bohm. Please proceed, Mr. Bohm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jonathan Bohm. I represent the InterFaculty Organization. We represent the professors, the counselors, the coaches at the seven state universities of Minnesota State. We appreciate the time, and I, of course, appreciate the opportunity to wear a tie. It's my first time since last March with a tie on, so thank you. I'm thankful to be here today, thankful to have the opportunity. Mark, our colleague from the two-year union did a wonderful job going through some of the details of the bill and how they'll impact our universities and all the things that we like in the bill. Obviously, the best way to help the largest number of students is through base operations and maintenance money that goes out to the campuses. That is the money that helps to protect the programs that we offer, protect the courses offered, the faculty that can be hired to teach those courses, the counselors that we need in our campuses. And as many of you know that have been on this committee for a few years, our campuses are hurting and they're having a very difficult time managing continued budget deficits. We're seeing tremendous losses of faculty and counselors through attrition. I see President Olson with us here. I know they've lost more than double digit faculty to attrition. And now we've got campuses up in Moorhead who are laying off more than 20 tenured faculty. We have more than 11 at St. Cloud that have been laid off in the last 2 years, including mental health counselors at a time when the need is the greatest, as was mentioned by Representative O'Neill yesterday. And so our campuses have a lot of need, and the $65 million in O&M money is gonna go a long way to help. Again, I just wanna reiterate that we do have concerns about balancing long-term budgets with one-time federal money. That one-time federal money is supposed to be used to help losses through COVID, of which our campuses have had many. And we're going to find it very difficult to balance our budgets long-term on one-time federal money. And what that is going to lead to, unfortunately, are continued reductions in the number of faculty and And the course is offered, and ultimately in that perspective, the real losers are the students. Students need classes to graduate. Students go to college to graduate. And if the courses don't exist for them to get out in 4 or 5 years, it only hurts them. So it's really important to have that base money. I want to highlight one other piece, the investment, continued investment in Z degrees and OER. These conversations have been happening now for a decade. The idea of the state being involved in advancing the work of OERs was birthed out of a conversation that was had back in 2011 with national experts that were brought to Minnesota by the student organizations that brought together faculty and administrators to have conversations about ways to save students real money. As the state continued to disinvest, we saw OERs and Z degrees as an opportunity to save students real money without a large state investment. So we appreciate the inclusion of that process or that program as well. And then I also just want to highlight the direct admissions process that was included in the governor's budget and is included in yours. That's going to be an important part of boosting our enrollments and ensuring that we meet the needs of all Minnesotans across the state, making sure that students who have traditionally been shut out of higher education have the opportunity to receive a letter in the mail that says, you are welcome here and we want you to come. So we're excited to work on that program with the Office of Higher Education and the System Office and do whatever we can as faculty to make sure that that program is successful. Thank you for all your work. It's very clear that your priority in the bill was to help campuses and help students and protect the quality of the education that, that we offer in Minnesota. So thank you for that.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Dr. Robert John Peterson. Dr. Peterson, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair Bernardi, and thank you, Madam Vice Chair Christensen. I'd also like to thank the committee members. On behalf of the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership, I'd also like to thank the committee in terms of higher ed for hearing the Minnesota Education Equity Partnership bill, considering aspects of the bill proposals contained in the bill, and making some tough choices in terms of how to allocate and spend and propose to spend the $120 million that was provided to the Committee for Higher Education. I'd also like to take time to thank our partners, many partners across organizations, nonprofits, and specifically systems and institutions like the Minnesota Private College Council, University of Minnesota Twin Cities Campus, and of course, Minnesota State and their leaders. I want to quote something that was written in an article, a report entitled Minnesota's Tomorrow, Equity is the Superior Growth Model. It was written by PolicyLink and it goes back 7 years to 2014. I'm going to just read one piece. Equity, and specifically race equity, is a win-win proposition for Minnesota. Investing in diversity as an asset and closing racial gaps is not just good for communities of color, it is good for all Minnesotans. The data analysis in this report shows that Minnesota's racial inequalities cost the state billions in lost economic output every year. Minnesota's gross domestic product would have been about $16.4 billion higher in 2011 if there had been no racial gaps in income and education. And this inequality deficit will continue to grow. A conservative estimate places that toll at $18.3 billion in 2015. These data underscore what former Senator Paul Wellstone from Minnesota knew. We all do better when we all do better. I am here representing MNEEP on behalf of the policy proposals that we put forward in our bill and know that there were tough choices that had to be made. I'm disappointed that there weren't investments made in the state grant aid program. We heard directly from students how important that was, but I also acknowledge the challenges that institutions are facing and systems are facing in terms of the economic health of their institutions. And so I don't begrudge any of the funds that have been put forward to those different institutions and systems. We have to work together as systems and as institutions and as leaders and as legislators. The current allocation for Minnesota higher education is not sufficient to close the equity gaps that exist in this state. And so in that regard, please know that MNEEP will continue to lead in good faith and presume positive intentions in terms of all the folks that represent higher education in Minnesota, but more explicitly, the students of color, the Black, Indigenous, and American Indian students who we are here to serve in terms of post-secondary. So overall, I thank everyone for their work. I'm looking forward to more collectively approaching the race equity work in higher education moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Peterson, for your testimony. Next up, we have Jeff Wilson. Mr. Wilson, if you would state your name and proceed.
Hello, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Jeff Wilson, Executive Director with College Possible Minnesota. Just want to thank you so much for the hard work that you continue to put into this process. College Possible is very fortunate to work with you in support of students across the state of Minnesota. Your support of College Possible means that more low-income students will successfully apply for, attend, and complete a college degree in Minnesota. In addition, we want to thank Representative Lee for his support in authoring the bill. He's a much appreciated supporter of our program. So I'll keep things brief and just say again, Madam Chair, committee members, thank you so very much for including us in this bill. We look forward to working with you as the bill makes its way through the process. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Paul Spies. Mr. Spies, you can continue.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Paul Spies, Legislative Action Team Lead with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your leadership in prioritizing investments to help diversify the teacher workforce. And Representative Keeler, for your leadership in authoring House File 1041, the Higher Ed Increased Teacher of Color Act, which this committee heard a few weeks ago. This omnibus bill will do much to address the most significant barrier to teaching, i.e. the financial costs for candidates of color and American Indian candidates, along with policies and investments adopted by the House Education Finance Committee from the Increased Teacher of Color Act. As you see in this bill, this omnibus bill, it would establish a new scholarship program for aspiring teachers of color and American Indian teachers. It appropriates $2 million in fiscal 22 and $2.5 million in fiscal 23. This is an important scholarship program that helps get at least 200 candidates per year towards student teaching in ways that would be challenging without the scholarships. While it falls far short of the $26 million that we had requested in House File 1041, it's a good start to get this program off the ground. We also appreciate in Section 11, the teacher candidate, underrepresented teacher candidate grant program, which is a spinoff of the teacher candidate grant program. While we would have preferred the language that keeps all those together, and we would have liked to see all aspects of our Bill 1041 included, we accept that this spinoff is in the omnibus bill, and we greatly, greatly appreciate the focused appropriation for both fiscal years for student teachers from underrepresented groups. In Section 12, we think there's still more work to be done for the licensure shortage area candidate grant program, and we ask that you consider adding in the reporting section that the number and percentage of student teachers in licensure shortage areas be accounted for in the report, because teacher candidates of color and American Indian candidates are not just in teaching because of their identity, but they also fill shortage areas as well. And that data should be reported. So again, thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee, for your leadership. And we look forward to working with you as things progress throughout the session. And please keep these priorities as you negotiate with the Senate.
Thank you, Mr. Spies. Next up, we have Rob Woodlick. Mr. Woodlick, please proceed. Is Mr. Woodlick here?
I don't see Mr. Woodlick on the call. I will reach out to him and see if we can get him on.
Okay. Thank you. We'll move on to Elena Williams. Ms. Williams, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elena Williams, and I am a student at Minneapolis College. I am a 29-year-old single mother from St. Louis Park, Minnesota. I have the privilege of working full-time for an accounting firm, and I attend courses full-time at Minneapolis College and am student body president. I am before you today to express support for the Minnesota Reconnect Scholarship Program, which I understand did not receive funding in the governor's budget proposal or the House and Senate omnibus bills for this biennium. As a working mother, I have been lucky to receive on-the-job training for the last 10 years that has led me to the opportunities at my current job today. However, my opportunities for advancement in my career field are limited without a degree, and therefore I sought to finish my associate's degree utilizing the Minnesota Reconnect Scholarship Program, which has helped offset costs not covered by federal financial aid. Learning of the scholarship program was the catalyst to my re-enrollment at Minneapolis College because adding the cost of education to my already tight budget as a mother was not feasible for me, but Minnesota Reconnect has made this possible. I am asking the committee today to please consider the current participants in the Minnesota Reconnect Scholarship Program. Learning that continuation of this program is not in the budget bill concerns me for my educational future and that of my peers who utilize this program. I encourage the committee to consider including this as a provision in the bill or to consider an off-ramp program to transition students out of the Minnesota Reconnect Scholarship Program and help them complete their degrees. Most of all, I am asking this committee to consider us students who are existing members of the Minnesota workforce working towards a common goal, a stronger Minnesota today and tomorrow. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Next up, we have Axel Kylander. Please proceed, Mr. Kylander.
Thank you, Chair Christensen, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Axel Kylander, and I'm the Vice President of LEAD-MN. Your omnibus bill comes at a critical time in the history of higher education in the state, at a moment that the students of now and tomorrow will be able to look at as an inflection point. The moment where their dreams of a better life were secured by responsive public policy or foundered and sunk on the edges of an unaffordable and unsupportive system. 3 years ago, a National College Attainment Network study found that 60% of colleges in Minnesota are not affordable for students. Since that research was done, tuition has gone up. Students have been among the forefront of those financially impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic as well. Plans that were held together by desperate threads have been torn apart as the world has been upended. In light of all this, thank you for including a tuition freeze and investments in our colleges in this bill. If we are to recover as a state, and if we as students are to come back and continue our pursuit of degrees and dreams, we need stable tuition. To increase tuition would only further lock the doors of our public colleges to students or would-be students who are struggling the most. It is to bar the gates to a better life, especially for those already marginalized by the inequities of our society. In addition to facing the challenges of affordability, students' mental health and basic needs are at critical risk, now more than ever. Funding included in the omnibus bill in these essential areas is vital to creating a robust system of support to protect the well-being of students as they work their way through college. As a suicide attempt survivor myself, I know how real the danger is of students not having the support, and I am relieved to see it included in this bill. The future has looked increasingly grim for college students for many years, but with responsive provisions on affordability and basic needs like those contained in the omnibus bill, we can begin to brighten that future. We look forward to working with you in the coming weeks to keep students in focus and produce a great outcome for our futures and the future of the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. I think we now have Rob Wudlick ready to testify. Please proceed.
Hi, my name is Rob Wudlick, for the record. I'm from Get Up, Stand Up to Cure Paralysis. Thank you for allowing my testimony today. I'm representing the spinal cord traumatic brain injury research grant program that I'm the current chair of. and have been on the console since the inception in 2015. We're very grateful for continued state funding and support from the Minnesota legislature, both parties, and now the governor too. We were a little bit of shocked to see it, you know, not in the initial governor's proposal, but we're very glad that it was included again. And, you know, this program has just created a lot of really good things. It provides a great educational opportunity from anyone from high school to, you know, postdoctorate levels. A lot of the labs that are funded by this program employ undergraduate and graduate students that are seeking to get, you know, further advanced or career degrees. This program's also helped fund, you know, it's some of the research has now led to a few companies starting up here in Minnesota, which is really exciting. So it's further developing economic growth and opportunities for high tech employment and careers. And it's also bringing in money from other states and federal grant money. So this is a lot of these research projects would not have happened if it wasn't for this program. So I just want to give, it's really a great thing all around. And yeah. And it really helps a lot of people living with spinal cord and brain injuries. Myself, I have a spinal cord injury. It's hard to see on Zoom, but I don't have functional use of my hands. And I've lost, it's been 10 years now as of Sunday that I've been paralyzed from a diving accident. Where I live with my mom now, and you know, I'm 36 years old. So it's, it's delivering hope for a lot of people. So thank you for your continued support. And we look forward to meeting you all when the pandemic is over and helping spread the word about this more. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for that testimony. Last we have Sam Parmakar. Mr. Parmakar, if you could state your name and proceed, please.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Christensen and members of the committee. My name is Sam Parmakar, and I'm the State Government Director for the Minnesota Student Association, the undergraduate student government at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to testify in support of House File 993 today. The COVID-19 pandemic has laid bare a truth that students have long been reckoning with. The rising cost of college continues to put higher education out of reach for more and more Minnesotans. This bill is not the silver bullet to fix the affordability crisis, but it takes some important steps to meet the needs of students. One way the bill does this is by investing in higher education institutions themselves. The $40 million base increase to the U of M ensures that budgetary shortfalls from the COVID-19 pandemic don't fall on the shoulders of tuition-paying students. We're also grateful that members of this committee are pushing for a tuition reduction from the Board of Regents. A healthy increase in funding coupled with reduced tuition is the best way to ensure that our state's land-grant institution is meeting its obligations to students and taxpayers. I also want to applaud the inclusion of the Hunger Free Campus Act in this legislation. As the costs of tuition, housing, and textbooks continue to rise, more and more students are skipping meals to stretch their dollar. Survey data from the U of M Twin Cities campus found that 1 in 5 students experience food insecurity, and we know that students experience food insecurity at similarly high levels across the state. The Hunger Free Campus language allows schools to apply for critical grant dollars to fund proven programs to combat food insecurity on their campuses. Reducing food insecurity is one of the best things we can do to ensure that students succeed in school. After all, we can't pay attention in class if we're worrying about where our next meal will come from. Finally, I want to close by addressing a few of the proposed amendments to the Hunger Free Campus language. We strongly support the A10 amendment, increasing the annual appropriation to the program from $150,000 to $223,000. Should the committee adopt this amendment, I would encourage members to consider increasing the maximum award amount an institution can receive. I also want to express concern about the A5 and A6 amendments. One of the cornerstones of this language is the flexibility it provides each school in terms of how grant dollars are used, and the A5 amendment would limit the ability of a school to meet the unique needs of its student body. The criteria in the Hunger Free Campus language are a baseline for schools to address food insecurity, and we shouldn't limit schools who want to use grant dollars to go above and beyond. The A6 amendment takes away the ability of students to determine whether their school effectively meets the Hunger Free Campus criteria. I want to emphasize that students know best when it comes to meeting needs on their campuses, and we should trust students to make this determination, not OHE. Overall, this is a really good bill that invests in meeting the needs of students. We're happy to support this bill. Thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. I want to thank nonpartisan staff for walking through the DE amendment with us yesterday, and thank everyone who came to testify on the bill yesterday and also today. Next, we'll be marking up the DE amendment to House File 993 and voting on the amendments presented by the committee. We have limited time to get through the agenda. I want everyone to have the opportunity to have amendments heard, but many of the issues addressed in them have been discussed before. So I will urge members to keep comments brief and to the point prior to the vote so that we can get through all of them. Chair Bernardi, would you like to move your bill?
Aye, thank you. I will move House File 993 be referred to Ways and Means.
Okay, we have before us House File 993. Rep. Bernardi has a DE amendment labeled DE2. Rep. Bernardi, will you move the DE2 amendment?
I will move the DE2 amendment to House File 993.
We also have a pair of author's amendments to the DE amendment. The first is labeled A4, and I believe this contains technical changes recommended by nonpartisan staff. I will move the author's amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Mr. Hopkins, could you give us a brief explanation of the changes?
Sure thing, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, the A4 amendment just corrects really some Scrivener errors on my part, frankly. We missed the word injury after the word brain for the spinal and brain injury account there on page 5 of 9-4. And in consolidating the Hunger Free Campus grants, the initial bill language struck the words non-monetary from non-monetary awards. It's important to strike that because there is now a monetary grant program that is attached to the Hunger Free Campus designation. So the second instruction just strikes that word non-monetary.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hopkins. It looks like we have a question, Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. I may not understand the procedure we're discussing here. Does that mean if we vote today to send this bill to Ways and Means, we are not going to have a committee discussion in response to the testimony which was given in committee today?
Representative Bernardi, could you answer that? Or excuse me, Chair Bernardi?
Oh, we can definitely have discussion among the members. Vice Chair Christensen is leading us in the amendments today right now to get in the author's form. We do have other people on call to answer members' questions as well. If members' questions do come up, we do have a hearing scheduled for tomorrow at 6 p.m. if we need to go to a hearing. And so we do have that so that we can make sure we have ample time.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. I guess I still don't understand. I think some of the conversation which was heard in committee today deserves a conversation with the AFL caucus or perhaps the minority caucus. It also deserves, I think, some conversation and discussion as a committee as a whole. My question is, will that discussion be heard and will it have an impact on the bill we send to Ways and Means?
Representative Sandell, I believe the discussions that will take place now, and someone correct me if I'm wrong, will be amongst us as members, if that's what your question, if that's what you're asking.
I'm sorry, Representative Christians, I guess I still understand. Are you saying that this meeting is where that discussion will happen, or is there going to be another one as we meet later in the week?
Chair Bernardi.
I just want to say we do have our testifiers, if members do have questions of our testifiers, we do have our testifiers likely are still on, and we also have on hand other people to answer questions like Commissioner Olson, Nikki Oliver, Meredith Fergus, Lane DeSalvo, Megan Fitzgibbon, Myron Franz, and Bill Mackey. I just want to make sure that you know that you have access to those people to ask questions of.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you. I do have a couple of questions and comments. One is I'd like to endorse and really and support with enthusiasm the work that's being done at Winona State and the work that's being done on the House file that President Olson talked about early in today's session. I have a question for Mr. Franz, and that involves the audit of state specials. And I do have a comment that I'd like to make in response to Mr. Cirkvenik's comment about a state grant program, which several of the testifiers made reference to today. May I do that now, or can I just make a quick comment?
I believe so. I think we're just speaking to the amendment right now, but go ahead, Representative.
Well, anyway, I
would jump in. I believe that there is time to discuss the bill after taking up the author's amendment.
Madam Chair and Mr. Herring, I'll reserve my comments until then. Thank you. I don't want to interrupt the flow of the committee. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rep. Sandel. Rep. O'Neill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Kirsten said no. I was just gonna say that for the freshmen that are on the committee that don't understand the process, we're doing markup now, and I'm not sure what Representative Sandel means by responding to the testimony, but normally that means drafting an amendment to change something, add more money or take money from one place to put it someplace else or something like that. But, you know, amendments were due yesterday, and so we don't have that opportunity to draft new amendments today, if that's what you mean in response to responding to testifiers. But we're doing the markup right now. We have amendments that have been drafted and reported and have met deadline, and so we're doing those amendments now. And we'll have full member discussion after that. And there is time on another day if we don't complete our work today. And if we don't get through all the member discussion, we could actually vote on it at the next meeting. So just so the member, you know, it's very hard doing these things remote. And for some members, this is the first time going through this process. So just a quick reminder to freshmen, that's the process that we're going through right now. We're going through amendments, and then we'll have member discussion. And if we don't finish member discussion, I believe there's another committee hearing that we can discuss more and then go to a vote, but we don't have time to do new amendments. So hopefully that helps, Mr. Representative Sandel.
Okay. Rep. Sandel, your hand is still up. Are you? Okay. Thank you very much. So seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion to adopt the A4 amendment to the DE amendment. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 And those opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A4 amendment is adopted. Next is the second author's amendment labeled A10. I will move the author's amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Chair Bernardi, please introduce your amendment.
This amendment removes $273,000 from the Office of Higher Education Agency Administrative Budget and adds $73,000 to the Hunger Free Campus grants in the second year and $200,000 to the Minnesota State Operation and Maintenance Appropriation to be used for mental health services for students. The amendment also requires the Office of Higher Education to run report on student transfer data to gain more information about the reasons students withdraw, and a report on utilization of student work study programs and opportunities for expansion, including wages and the interplay between state, federal, and institutional funds and their impacts on higher education on the program, as requested in Representative Mariani's Minnesota Equity Education Equity Partnership Legislation, House File 2393. And the bill also extends the Hunger Free grants into the TALES as well with that funding. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the A10 author's amendment? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, if Chair Bernardi could let the committee know if there was a fiscal note to the Mariani language that we're adding. I don't recall. We went through an awful lot of bills, and I'm trying to remember if there was a fiscal impact or not. I'm just wondering if you could mention that.
The it would be $70,000 impact fiscal note for one time.
Go ahead, Rep O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I haven't done the math here, Representative Bernardi. I'm just wondering, I'm assuming then that it all balances and we're staying within our target with that change?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Representative, okay, thank you. Representative Sandell, you have your hand up. Is that kind of a hangover from the last question or? Okay. So seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion to adopt the A10 amendment to the DE amendment. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? And the motion prevails and the A10 amendment is adopted. Next is the amendment labeled A2. Representative Albright, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to pull it up here very quickly. If you can indulge me for. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is an amendment that I think is work that came out of the mini session a couple of years ago that Chair Pawlowski and I put together that is already in the bill, but I think it extends it even further because the House File 1519, which is a bill brought forward by Representative Haley and has been a mission of hers for a number of years, what it really does is it interjects the support of the business community. And so what you have before you is the compilation of an opportunity for businesses to send match money towards the efforts of individuals who are trying to accomplish getting either a four-year degree or a two-year certificate and be eligible for these scholarship programs. This has been the process over the last couple of years. I understand that Chair Bernardi is going to be working with me as we move forward, and I would solicit her comments on it before making my final comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Bernardi.
Thank you, Representative Albright. And this bill that you bring before us has some good language in it that we are supportive of. Of expanding the institution may have one additional area of study or certification based on workforce shortage for full-time employment requiring post-secondary education that is unique to the institution-specific region. And so there's parts I would love to work with you on this and get the language so that we can fully support it. We don't want it to limit the number of students that can participate, and so I would be happy to work with you before Ways and Means if you so choose.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bernardi, you tailed off in terms of your voice. And so I heard something to the effect that you agree with the language, but there might be some concerns over exclusionary, your words, not mine, of folks from eligibility for these scholarships programs. And if I might trouble you just for an elaboration in terms of, since the voice was kind of in and out, if you elaborated on terms of those concerns so that working remotely, that we can maybe dialogue a little bit on that right here and now.
Chair Christensen, Representative Albright, the students, the part that we need to talk more about that we do not want to change from how we originally did this bill, working with Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate, is limiting it to third year. The most important one that we need to focus on is limiting it to students that are only enrolled for 12 credit versus 9 credits. So that's the type of language that we want to look at and not limit it to students and change the intent in which it was started.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, thank you. And with that encouragement of Representative Bernardi, I might offer an oral amendment at this time, if that's acceptable to the chair.
Chair Bernardi.
I would prefer that we in good faith work on it before Ways and Means and present it at the Ways and Means Committee. These get complicated when language is changed at this point in time.
Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, thank you. The oral amendment that I would offer at this time is just to restrike 12 and insert 9.
Chair Bernardi.
What I would like to do is there's that language I don't think needs to be added into the bill at all, that we can leave the language as it currently is. So I think that that's what we could work towards in Ways and Means. And so we make sure that we get this right.
Madam Chair,
thank you. And Representative Bernardi, based upon your commentary on that, then I would presume that the amendment as it stands would be ready then for Ways and Means, pursuant to the fact that you stated that the language is pretty well acceptable. I offered to take it from 12 credits down to 9. That seemed to be the sticking point in the past. I'm certainly happy to amend that to 9 to expedite this being added to the bill and press it on to Ways and Means at this time. And I would certainly believe that my caucus with ranking members' endorsement support that oral amendment.
I would just like to say, Representative Christensen, may I proceed?
Yeah, go ahead, Chair Bernard.
Representative Albright, I don't want to do legislation on the fly here. I'd like to work with you before the Ways and Means Committee and see if we can come to language that we don't change that part of the bill, and then we focus on the part that has to do with the workforce shortage area in a specific region.
Representative Buffett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bernardi, I certainly can appreciate your concerns, but that's exactly what this committee is all about, is actually putting legislation together, quote unquote, on the fly. And we are marking up the omnibus bill, and this is a part of putting that bill together. So if that is a concern that is about the three-year program, would you be amenable to striking that language?
Chair Bernardi.
So Representative Christensen and Representative Albright, looking at it initially, the lines of 1.10 to, I'd have to defer to Mr. Hopkins to make sure that this is the accuracy, this is how the language would ought to be able to include the specific region. I would have to defer to him to ask where we would end the language to just only incorporate that part of the bill.
Representative Albright.
Representative Chair Christensen, Representative Bernardi, I'm wondering if Mr. Hopkins might weigh in terms of where that division might be appropriate.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair and members, I think there are two issues here. One is that, so in general, the DE amendment has been offered, but it has not been adopted yet. So the A2 amendment is an amendment to an amendment. And typically amendments to amendments are not in order. That said, if it is the will of the committee, we can make that work. There's no ironclad rule against it. So getting to the second part of the issue, which is how to amend the A2. So currently the language for this statute says that in order to be eligible for the scholarship, a student has to be enrolled for 9 credits, whether they're in college or whether they're at a state university, 9 credits. The A2 amendment as offered says 9 credits at state colleges, but 12 credits at universities. What Representative Albright has proposed is finding a way to get back basically to that original language in statute, which just says 9 credits makes you eligible, whether you're at a college or at a university. I can definitely work with the committee, and we can do an oral amendment to the A2 to make that happen. But it's up to the chair whether or not such an amendment would be in order.
Madam Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hopkins. Representative Bernardi, I think that we're singing harmony to the same song here. With Mr. Hopkins' elaboration on that, if we work bipartisan to strike 12 and insert 9 and took it on good faith and adopted it, you certainly can amend it to your liking, along with my efforts as well in ways and means. But I would think that this is an important provision that sends a very strong signal to those in the trades as well as to the educational committee in terms of our commitment to bringing forward teachers as well as the business community, who is putting skin in the game, particularly to send students in to get those educational advancements for the workforce that we're so in need of. So with that, Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi, if you would be willing to accept that good faith, small oral amendment, I think we can move forward and make this bill much stronger.
Madam Chair, I do have a question for Mr. Hopkins, and I would like to work with you, Representative Albright, and I just want to make sure that the language is correct. And like you say, if it's in good faith, if it's not how we had anticipated and it worked out, we'd have to fix that before Ways and Means together. Mr. Hopkins, I want to make sure that the language is the language necessary at all to, I want it to be kept whole the way it was before. Can you please verify with me how that's handled versus amending a certain number in this bill that it looks like possible language was added? Can we just keep it whole and take the part about the institution specific region?
Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi. So, the statute currently says that a student is eligible for an award if they're enrolled in for 9 credits, regardless of whether they go to a college or a university. So the idea that Representative Albright is proposing is to basically keep that status quo. 9 credits, whether you're at a college or university, makes you eligible for the scholarship. The way to do that with an oral amendment to the A2 would be at page 1, line 18, delete the new language in a 2-year college, and then on lines 19 to 23, delete all the new language. So basically that would keep that new paragraph C, which is important since we are breaking these up. We added a new paragraph B, so we need to keep that paragraph C in there. But otherwise, it keeps all the language for eligibility stuff regarding enrollment, just as it is right now. So the oral amendment would be page 1, line 18, delete in a two-year college. Page 1, lines 19 to 23, delete the new language.
Mr. Hopkins, could Mr. Hopkins repeat that again? I was having an unstable connection here, and it looks like we're very close. So could you repeat that again, Mr. Hopkins?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Hopkins, I'm sorry.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi, the oral amendment would be page 1, line 18, delete in a two-year college, and then page 1, lines 19 through 23, delete the new language. So that would keep the existing language regarding enrollment for eligibility.
So, Madam Chair, I just want to verify, are we able to, it's important that we keep, we're getting close. Can we just delete after lines 1.17, or is there any reason why we have to keep any of that language that follows in 118 to 123,
1.23,
excuse me?
Mr. Hopkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi, so the reason why you wouldn't just strike all the new language from lines 18 to lines 23 is in order to keep that new designation of the paragraph C. That's the only reason, because there's all this new paragraph B here, so we need to make sure that this paragraph C stays in.
Okay, well, I'm not following you on that. I want to keep 1.10 to 1.17. Is there a way of fixing that so we just have that? That is what's kept.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Bernardi, yes. So the oral amendment would preserve everything from the beginning of the A2 amendments to lines 1.17. And it would basically get rid of all the new additions and changes from lines 1.18 to 1.23.
Okay, that would be fine with me. I would, Chair Christensen needs to move it as the committee chair, but as the chair of the committee, I am fine with it accepting that.
Madam Chair.
Okay, yes, Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I renew that oral amendment as Mr. Hopkins has elucidated, striking on line 1.18 in a two-year college and deleting everything after that from 1.19 through 1.23.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Do we just do a voice vote on this, can I ask?
Yes, parliamentary inquiry, yes.
Okay, thank you, Representative Albright. So all those in favor of Representative Albright's oral amendment, please say aye.
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 And any opposed? Okay, we got it done. Thank you,
Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Brenner.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I pick up here, seeing no further discussion, Representative Albright will renew his motion to adopt the A2 amendment to the DE. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Chair.
Aye.
The amendment as amended?
As amended.
As amended. I'm sorry. Thank you for that. Yes, so the amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And those opposed? Okay, thank you. Next is the amendment labeled A5. Representative Erickson, would you like to move your amendment?
Madam Chair, I move the A5 amendment to House File 993.
Okay, Representative Erickson, please present your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this amendment clarifies that hunger-free campus grants can be used only to establish food pantries, provide information to students on SNAP, MFIP, and other programs that reduce food insecurity, and establish an emergency assistance grant program for students. In other words, what I have deleted is the annual event that they could have, or the task force. Excuse me, I had to look at my statute book. And I would ask for support.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi.
Madam Chair, did you call on me? My internet says connection is unstable. And I'm in a second.
Yes, go ahead, Chair Bernardi.
So I do not support this amendment. The students came up with this initiative and have really good proponents on it. And I do not want to limit to that. So for those reasons, I would oppose this amendment.
Is there any more discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Erickson will renew her motion to adopt the A5 amendment to the DE. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 And those opposed?
No.
Aye.
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Next, the amendment labeled A6. Representative Erickson, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A6 amendment to House File 993. This amendment for Hunger-Free Campus Grants really reflects what we've just learned recently from the Legislative Audit Report on grant management. This happened to be at another agency, but I think it's really important that we consider that the release of grants needs to be verifiable. It needs to have results. And so this language removes the statewide student association responsible for reviewing grant applications and providing final approval and giving that to the Office of Higher Education to take that responsibility. I ask for your support.
Chair Bernardi, do you have any comments?
Yeah, again, I would say the same thing for this. The students came up with a really good initiatives, and I want to continue to support the students in their endeavors and would vote against changing this language to the Office of Higher Education.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just ask Chair Bernardi just a quick question. Representative Erickson raises a really good point, and it's something that was discussed in the OLA reports, many of them actually, making sure that there's good transparency and accountability. And my concern too is that if this is going to be granted by a student association, I believe that lacks that transparency and accountability. So let me ask Chair Bernardi if you have an idea of how that transparency accountability would happen within a student association. And again, that's a different student association on every single campus. So yes, if you could just let us know what your thoughts are, because now we're actually granting them money. So this is a different, I'm just wondering what you think about the transparency. Thank you.
Vice Chair Christensen and Representative O'Neill, I have not heard that this is a problem, and I would like to defer your question to our Minnesota Student Association President, Sam Palmacher, who is on the call today.
Mr. Palmacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative O'Neill. So I guess let me try and clarify this if I can. So my understanding of the language is there's actually a two-step process to the grant allocation. So number one, a college or university has to either outline how they have met or will meet the Hunger-Free Campus criteria with the grant money. And then after verifying that they would meet that criteria, they would be eligible to receive the grant. Now, my understanding of the language, and I believe this is a House language, I hope I'm not getting it confused with the Senate language, but it would be up to the student associations to simply determine whether or not their school meets the criteria for the grant. It would not be the student association actually saying, you know, here's who gets grant money, here's who doesn't get grant money. So my understanding is it's the student association saying, okay, our college says they're going to do X, Y, and Z with this grant money. are they actually doing that, or do they actually have a concrete plan to do that? And if the college says no, I would expect that OHE would probably not award that grant. But I think after that kind of designation is agreed upon by the student association, the college is then eligible to receive the grant money from OHE, and OHE makes a final determination as to whether grant money is awarded.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if we could hear from OHE what the process is as they understand and read the language as it currently is, and where the transparency and accountability would be. And, you know, maybe it lies on the campus themselves, but I just want to be clear as to what exactly this language does. That's what we had concerns with.
Chair Bernardi.
Yes, could you please, Vice Chair Christensen, could you please call on either Commissioner Olson, and may defer to somebody else, but start with Commissioner Olson.
Okay, let's start with Commissioner Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And at this time, I'd like to defer to Lane DeSalvo in our Grants Management Division, who can describe the process.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair Bernardi, for having me. My name is Lane DeSalvo. I'm the Competitive Grants Administrator for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education, and I manage competitive grant programs like the one that's being proposed today. So there are many steps that are taken at the state level to ensure that there is transparency and accountability, both with folks who are administering the grant and those who are receiving it. That includes, at least annual reporting, if not more, site visits, monitoring, financial reconciliation, things of that nature. Ways that we include the community, and we would intend to include students in this process, is in selecting proposals and making choices, or helping score proposals, and use our basically our scoring and evaluation process in order to determine who receives funds and why. We do have a set process that's a little bit plug and play for competitive grants. Obviously, there are specifics that are different depending on content, but yeah, there are many different checkpoints that we have to go through in order to manage a grant with integrity.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, my question was to the exact language in this specific process. I understand what competitive grants are supposed to do and how they're supposed to be administered and then audited. I have done both in my career at one point or another. I would ask if you would look at the language of this particular bill and this particular expansion and let us know what you read in the language as how this is administered and where are the check and balances in this particular language. And if you need a moment to do that, we could wait, but I'm asking specifically about this language in this bill as it pertains to the grant money now going through student associations. So the student association is supposed to verify this information, and I'm asking who's going to verify that information that the student association transmitted to you. Is it something that the college or university are also going to verify? Like, where are the checks and balances?
Chair Bernardi, so that is a really good question. What I would need to do, and what we would normally do for any competitive grant process, would be to take a look at that language and analyze it and see how we would build a program with those checks and balances around it. So if it's okay, I would like to take a look at the language and get back to you as to how exactly, or like what exactly our plan would be before just answering, on the spot.
I see that Ms. Oliver has her hand up. Ms. Oliver, do you have something to add?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. So my, for the record, my name is Nikki Oliver, and I'm the manager over our grants department and government relations for the Office of Higher Education. And there's two parts to this from what I'm reading. There's the grant part, which is in the appropriate
approval.
And according to that third part of the writer, it's just saying that the student association will verify that the institutions that applied, that have gone through the application process, which I'm assuming the Office of Higher Education would be the one developing based on the appropriation, we would develop that entire competitive grant process. But it looks like what the student association is designated to do is verify that those institutions that are on that have applied meet the designation, which is in the language down in Article 2, Section 33 through 35. That's my understanding. So it doesn't appear that the student associations will be in control of giving out the money or the entire application process. That would fall upon the Office of Higher Education. They would just be giving final approval that those institutions that had applied do meet the designation requirements that are listed in, like I said, the language in Article 2. So if you want to make that clearer, maybe that's what you can do, but that's how I see it as it's written. So my understanding is the office would create the entire competitive grant program and process. And obviously, like Lane mentioned, we do consult with stakeholders on certain things, but we will be solely responsible for the competitive grant program itself. And within that, because of what's written in the writer, we would have to also get a sign off essentially from the student association on any of those potential awarded institutions to make sure they meet the designation requirement. That's how I'm reading it.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Oliver is correct.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just invite Representative Erickson to also comment. I know she had looked at this quite a bit, and I'm just going to turn it over to her at this point if she wants to
ask her
questions. Thanks.
Representative Erickson.
Well, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I interrupted there just to verify what Ms. Oliver said was correct. You know, as we look at all the grant dollars that are flowing from the agencies or through some policy that we adopt, as has been adopted for the Hunger Free Campus program, we need to have a much better accountability system. And I think making the Office of Higher Education as the main giver and receiver is so important to us as we look at, you know, even teaching our young people how to be responsible for dollars that they may not understand. You know, our tax dollars that are given now as a grant to ensure that we don't have hungry students on our campuses. So I think, you know, using common sense, this amendment works really well because we put a major part of state government in higher education in charge.
Okay, is there any further discussion on the A6 amendment? Chair Bernardi.
Madam Chair, I am opposed to this amendment and would ask our members to vote no.
Okay, those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No.
The motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Next is the amendment labeled A9. Representative O'Neill, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move the A9, an amendment to the DE2. And Madam Chair, I have concerns. I've had concerns since we first heard the direct admissions program. The deeper I got into it, the more I read about it, the more I learned about it, the less I liked it. And I know that we've had at least one testifier say they do like it. But to me, it's just adding a whole bunch of bureaucracy and unnecessary levels of additional government to really accomplish sending a letter to a high school senior. I think this could be accomplished in a much simpler way than spending $1 million to build infrastructure. So simply put, this amendment would take that $1 million appropriation, eliminate the direct admissions program, and put it where I really think is really important and really necessary, and where I've actually heard faculty literally beg us for additional help, which is to fund mental health counselors on campuses. We heard it again today. I heard it from a couple people today about how the dire need is. And that would take and put, there is another appropriation that I would shift over to the mental health counselors on campuses. And that would be a total of $1.5 million appropriation for mental health counselors on MnState campuses. And it would also bolster and include another $500,000 for concurrent enrollment programs. So those are, I think these are really well-placed dollars, and I think these are really, really important things. There is a dire need for both. The concurrent enrollment in particular, we had a lot of testimony about that, and I've heard a lot of that in my district. I have, you know, a lot of campuses, not campuses, but high school campuses that use this and really need the money here in concurrent enrollment. So if my principals are listening to me, I hear you, and that's why I'm shifting $500,000 of extra money into concurrent enrollment programs. So that is my A9, and I'd ask for your support.
Chair Bernardi.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. I know she talked to you yesterday about the importance of mental health and how we've heard that from students. And I totally agree with her and continue want to work with her on that. I oppose this amendment. We do have $2.5 million of money to help go towards be a part of some mental health services. And we've added another $100,000 per year that we had funded the last biennium. And I am opposing this amendment.
Any more discussion? Okay, seeing no further discussion, Representative O'Neill will renew her motion to adopt the A9 amendment to the DE. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, any opposed?
No.
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 Motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Seeing no further amendments to the DE2 amendment, I will now renew Chair Bernardi's motion to adopt the DE2 amendment to House File 993. I will remind members that this is not a final vote on the bill. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
As amended? Aye. Is it as amended, the DE2?
The DE2 as amendment, thank you.
Thank you. So are we calling the vote then?
Okay, those signify by saying aye. Let's try that again.
Aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, the motion prevails and the DE2 amendment as amended is adopted. HF 993 as amended is now before us. Members, is there any further discussion to HF 993 as amended? Chair Bernardi, do you have any closing comments?
I see that Representative O'Neill does her hand up. I just want to make sure.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It took me a minute to get over to the correct button. So I just have a couple concerns still. I already stated my very strong opposition to the direct admissions. I just think that we're adding another layer of government that's completely unnecessary. I think that this could be something that could be solved with really no money and just an encouragement to high school counselors to please remind their seniors that if they graduate and they have a GED, if they don't graduate and later get a GED, they can attend and be admitted into a two-year state college. So I just don't think that this is necessary. I just think it's a money that could be spent elsewhere, like I said, for mental health counselors on state college campuses where they're really needed. The other thing I have a concern about is, you know, I understand why we want to do tuition freezes. I know that's good for the students, but it's not necessarily good for Minn State. And the reason I say that is because they're so limited in what they are able to do. They have revenue from the state, from us, from taxpayers, and they have revenue from tuition and fees. And they don't have much other options. Some of them might have small little revenue streams, but that's primarily where the revenue comes from. So when we freeze their tuition, it really hampers what they're able to do. And I think they did say that yesterday. While it's great for the students, and I realize that tuition is very heavy for our students, we have to really balance what we're going to be doing with Minn State. So I have a concern there. And I do, let's see, one other quick thing. The state grant program, you know, because we had COVID, we actually had a balance on the books. So I believe it was $5 million that we transferred because it wasn't used and, you know, because of COVID and everything else. I know that we had a proposal to reduce the student share. The fiscal note was 40 something million dollars. So if we, when we had gone from 50% down to 47%, I think it was. And I know within the target, we weren't able to do that, but that would have been, if you wanted to help directly to students, that might have been another option too. So those are just some of my thoughts and some of my concerns, but the biggest one is the direct admissions. I think that it's, again, growing government, and I just don't think it's going to be much benefit on the other end of it. So I'm strongly opposed to that. And because of that, I will be opposing the bill today. Unfortunately, I tried to remove it and I tried to put it into an area that I felt was much more appropriate and much more needed. So those are my thoughts today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Chair Bernardi, any last words?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's been an honor to serve on this committee with all of you and working together to help our students and help them achieve their goals, their dreams, and their economic security for them and their families. This bill represents our best effort to help our students the best we can, and I would appreciate your vote on this bill, a yes vote. Thank you.
Chair Bernardi's motion is before us. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
No.
Okay, the motion prevails and HF 993 as amended is referred to Ways and Means.
Madam Chair, I think you needed to do a roll call on that bill.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. The clerk can take the roll, please.
Chair Christensen.
Aye.
Chair Bernardi.
Aye.
Representative O'Neill.
No.
Representative Albright.
Yes.
Representative Daniels.
No.
Representative Erickson.
No.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Heintzman.
No.
Representative Howard.
Yes.
Representative Keeler.
Yes.
Representative Cleavorn.
Yes.
Representative Kosnick.
Yeah.
Representative Kreisha.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative Meckland. Representative Noor. Representative Sandell.
Yes.
Representative Sandsted.
Aye.
Representative Thompson. Representative Mekland? Representative Thompson? There are 13 ayes, 4 nays, and 2 absent.
Thank you. So the motion prevails, and HF 993 as amended is referred to Ways and Means. Thank you, folks. The meeting is now adjourned.